looked like. Black Friday was still a bust for consumer hardships, and revolts culminated in a large-scale Target protest in Columbia Heights, attracting national figures. All this and more on What's at Stake. Good morning, and welcome to the DC Takeover edition of What's at Stake. I'm your guest host, Kimon Freeman, representing We Act Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We are joined today by a very powerful community lawyer. His name is Aristotle Ari Teresa, a civil rights attorney specializing in zoning, land use, and urban development. He's the principal of Stoop Law in Anacostia, where he represents public housing residents and homeowners in disputes with government agencies, nonprofits, and private developers. Mr. Teresa has successfully appealed zoning approvals, sued developers, and currently leads the Bethesda African Cemetery desecration case and a 46 homeowner construction defects action in D.C. He has served as an adjunct professor teaching land use, urban planning, critical race theory, and urban politics. A fourth-generation Washingtonian, he is deeply rooted in the communities he serves. Ari, welcome to What's at Stake.
Thanks for having me, Kimon.
Now, as we said, Mayor Amira Bowser is not seeking a fourth term, so she would not be matching the record of the mayor for life, Marion Barry. And we're here to talk about what is her legacy, what was the good, the bad, and the ugly, in terms of what she is leaving Washington, D.C. Now, me personally, I think Mira read the handwriting on the wall and knew she wouldn't win. Plus, securing the $1 billion stadium deal set her up for life. That's my position. Ari, what do you think Mira Bowser's legacy would be for D.C. and what the mayoral race will look like and shaping up going into next year?
Well, I think that Bowser has a pretty large legacy. She served for a very long time. I can't think of another mayor in the country, at least in modern times, I'd say since she's been in office, that served as long. And when she came in, I can remember her very first State of the District address, and she promised to end homelessness. I don't know if anyone remembers that promise. That by the year 2020, she would end homelessness in the District of Columbia. And I think just looking back on it, it's a quaint promise to make. It's kind of quaint, like, oh, I'm going to end homelessness. I don't even think the mayor-elect of New York would promise to do something like that in this day and age. And I think Bowser's legacy is kind of because she switched from that. She didn't keep to that. She moved to production of housing, which was, maybe I'm not going to end homelessness, but I'm going to create 36,000 new homes and also give people a fair shot or a fair opportunity, but forget ending homelessness. And I think that her legacy is that switch from kind of this quaint promise to end homelessness to technocratic governance of, well, I'm going to produce X number of homes and the stats show it's going to lower rents or whatever. And you see that, like, even very progressive mayors now speak that language. They don't speak the language of ending homelessness. They speak the language of producing a large amount of homes. And that's straight out of Bowser's playbook. Even the mayor-elect of New York, Zohran Mamdani, I think I'm saying it right. Zohran Mamdani. I think that, he made a very similar promise about housing, which was, I'm going to produce X number of houses, right? Or X number of new units, make some of them affordable or make them affordable. And I think that's Bowser's legacy, is that kind of governance versus kind of a more grassroots, people-centric governance to more of a, well, this is what the data says, this is what we're gonna try to accomplish. And if it ends homelessness or not, like, I don't really know, but we're gonna give people a fair shot if we follow these rules. And I think, unlike other mayors, because I think this is a shift that's happened, you know, across the country, from this kind of quaint governance to technocracy, to a technocratic government. I think unlike other mayors, Mayor Bowser was able to kind of ride that shift and bridge it and stay in office and stay relevant. Because a lot of mayors came in during that time period and through that shift and they went away. They were voted out. But for whatever reason, you know, the mayor was able to stay in office through that shift. And I think that is a credit to her skills as a politician and her relevance in D.C.
She actually ran unopposed in her, I believe, in her second term, ran unopposed. Is just, and that's almost unheard of. So, yes, she's the second longest serving mayor. The only other mayors had served two terms. But I'm glad you brought up the housing, because I had completely forgot that promise, you know, and it bears repeating that Mayor Mondani in New York City was quoting Mario Cuomo, when he said that, you know, you campaign in poetry and you govern in prose. So, you know, God forbid us another politician who's broke a campaign promises, you know, sounds eerily familiar. But we need to point out and analyze what she was able to do during the three terms that she was mayor. First and foremost, for me, I need to point out that more people voted against Muriel Bowser in the last election than voted for her, because some people are under the assumption that she would have been expected to win for fourth term. And the polls do not bear that. If you talk to the majority of people on the street, I did street reporting at A Street Festival. That's a sample polls, and she would have lost by a landslide. And in the last election, the data shows that she, in fact, had more people vote against her than voted for her. But unfortunately, Robert White and Trayon White, Barry White and Maurice White, also split that majority opposition vote, which is why ranked choice voting is so important, and why she was so strongly against it. And now that she's even more unpopular with the capitulation and destruction of Black Lives Matter Plaza and what have you. In fact, you know, Laura Ingraham from Fox News on air said that Muriel Bowser is the best mayor D.C. ever had, right? And Donald Trump is on record commending her, saying how great of a job that she was doing because she's working with the administration. And then somehow, some way, some of these bougie Negroes with good government jobs will tell you that is good, that somehow, you know, doing whatever Trump tells you to do and hope for the best is great leadership. And I beg to differ. But so now that she's even more unpopular and no chance of splitting the votes of that majority opposition, she wisely, in my opinion, quit while she was ahead. And so she has accomplished most of what she already set out to do, you know, from the Exxon nuclear power company buying out Pepco, which created a lot of wealth for a lot of people and stockholders at the time, including herself, gutting ERAP and TOPA, to billions in free taxpayer money to a billionaire for a new stadium, with the thinly veiled promise of affordable housing construction, which has now morphed into talks of building a casino. Right. No mention of casino when we was protesting and delivering testimony for this deal. They said nothing about casino at that time. But now they got the green light. It's whatever. Right. And then, of course, her international contacts from Qatar, what have you, has set her up for life. So she's good. So, and that's a capsule of what she was able, some of the damage that she done in the city. One of the things that I think that she did well for the city was when she did, in fact, stand up for Trump, when she did, in fact, declare 1600, you know, the Black Lives Matter Plaza. That was an international line in the dirt that attracted people from all over the world that came to see that, including Good Trouble himself, John Lewis, who had glowing comments about what that meant. You know, one of his dying visits, public appearances, was at the Black Lives Matter Plaza, commending her for the creation of that. So we have to acknowledge that. And then I also need to acknowledge, because I was part of the press conference and the rolling out of the Office of Racial Equity. Unfortunately, just like Black Lives Matter Plaza, the Office of Racial Equity was just a paper tiger. It was just symbolism, and it was not designed to actually change policy. And unfortunately, that has been too much of the case when we talk about the legacy of Mayor Bowser in terms of benefiting of the people. Those are that's my good, bad, and ugly report on her. Now, do you have anything that you can say that the mayor did well?
I think she underused her agencies in some places, like the Zoning Commission and then also the Office of Racial Equity. I'm trying to think of things that I agree with her on. But I think, you know, I think for me, it's just the fact that she was able to stay in power so long. And you know, I think her legacy remains to be seen. I know she's built up a lot of allies, and she has a lot of people that she's made a lot of money, a lot of people in government positions. And it'll be interesting to see how DC transitions from that. I know that there's McDuffie and Janice running, and I think a lot of her legacy is going to be determined by who wins. If McDuffie wins, then it's almost like we will have had 20 years of the Green Team, Fenty, Bowser, and McDuffie, and it's just going to be continuity in DC. I think status quo, business as usual. But I think if Janice were to win, that would kind of, you know, turn things upside down, because I can't imagine her keeping a lot of the people that Bowser has put in place. I mean, in terms of her legacy, it's difficult to know what that truly is until the race occurs. But in terms of something that she's done well, I mean, I would just say keeping her team together. For this long, there's been scandals. There's been scandals, but her ability to weather these scandals and weather, you know, even like the greater economic shift as cities became more neoliberal, her ability to like weather these things, I think, you know, I don't know if it's a positive for the people, but, you know, you can't deny her ability as a politician and as a leader to stay in power, which I think, you know, is the goal for a lot of politicians, which is just to stay in power. And she did that throughout varied times and a lot of obstacles and a lot of difficulties. So speaking good about her, that's what I would say, is just that, you know, she's very, very skilled.
Well, you know, one of the things I'd say that she did good, a lot of people would be surprised to learn that the mayor and I was actually acquaintances before she became mayor, and she took me to see Lil Wayne at the MCI Center, you know, and Lil Wayne, she's a big Lil Wayne fan, and Lil Wayne, as you know, was what? He was received a pardon, if you will, from Trump. So these are, you know, these Trump-like people. Dr. Edward Chapman, a community doctor, longtime community doctor here in Washington, D.C., said that we have a number of black people in office who was much a detriment to our community as Trump. And we just need to acknowledge this, you know, the reality of that, the validity of that. But you brought up the fact that the mayoral race candidates. Now, at the time of this recording, it had not been made public, but by the time this airs, we are expecting Janice Lewis-George to publicly announce her candidacy, and we're expecting King McDuffie to publicly announce his candidacy. And I think you are right. You point out something that people need to realize, is that Ward 4 has created, multiple mayoral candidates, as you said, from the Fenty to Mayor Bowser, and now Janice Lewis-George, all coming out of Ward 4 council seats. In D.C., we like to call that Ward Uptown. So these cats came from Uptown. Unlike Fenty and Mural, Janice is actually looked at as a progressive, and we're hoping that she won't succumb to the notion that Zora Mandani talked about in his quote of Mario Cuomo and campaigning in poetry and governing in prose, because we've already seen Mandani doing some questionable behavior already, and he hasn't even taken office by him standing against a primary challenge against apartheid Shakur, Hakeem Jeffries. But having said that, Janice Lewis-George's track record, her voting record, stands up, unlike Robert White's, in terms of being seen as a progressive, one of the few progressives on the DC Council. So she would be the anti-establishment candidate. And then, if by virtue, then that means Kenya McDuffie would be the establishment candidate. What is your opinion and your analysis on Kenya McDuffie and his platform and his track record, and your analysis of hopeful mayoral other mayoral hopeful Janice Lewis-George on her platform and her voting record?
What I'll say first is that Bowser started out as a progressive. When she ran, she was one. Her first election.
Yeah, if you're saying you're going to eliminate homelessness.
Shifted. Yeah, I don't even think progressive candidates today would come out and say that. I think that that's a bygone era. But I think that McDuffie would just be a continuation of Bowser. I think that they're pretty much on the same page. You can expect people like Mendelsohn to endorse him, Bowser to endorse him. And I think a lot of the people who are running the agencies will stay in place for a while, a bit. It's not going to be like Janice, where as soon as she gets in, I imagine she's asking for a bunch of people's resignations. So I think that primarily with McDuffie, like regardless of like what his voting history is and what he does, that there's that concern is that it's just going to be a continuation of the status quo, and the same government really is going to be in play, and it's going to be the government we've had since Fenty. And I think that McDuffie, like in terms of his voting, he's kind of a mixed bag. I talked to somebody else about him, and I know he had that baby bonds legislation, and he's like one of those guys who, and what I how I described him or how he was described was somebody who will wreck your present and promise you the future. And so he's done a lot of stuff with development. Like he's over the Economic Development Committee. And for most stuff, he's like voted against people when it comes to like improving like renter rights, giving money away to developers through TIFs. Like he's definitely like more of the mainstream like corporate candidate versus Janice. And Janice, I think she has a more positive voting record, but also there are things that progressives do that ultimately harm black communities sometimes. And I think sometimes she falls on the wrong side of that. But, I don't know if that's intentional or just not enough care is taken to ensure equity when like some progressive policies take root. Like I can think concretely of a couple examples in Ward 8. There was like a green bill that passed. Do you recall that, Kimon?
No,
The
I don't.
green, yeah, there was like some kind of green building bill, and there was a green housing bill that did not pass, but then there was like a green another green bill, and because of that bill, Ward 8 was unable to get amenities and a much needed amenities in a community center, which, you know, due to the bill being passed, it increased the cost to the point where a pool and a gym were no longer feasible for two community centers that are about to be built here. And so just stuff like that, that like happens, that are like kind of progressive policies, and they don't really think about the fallout to them. So, I mean, if I had to choose, of course, it would be Janice, just because I believe that D.C. needs to head a new direction. And I don't think that can happen under McDuffie.
Yeah, McDuff, you know, McDuffie's a nice guy. He was part of the signatories that led to the purchase of WEAC Radio to prevent us from record, particularly on the Brooklyn Manor redevelopment project that would have destroyed our family-sized units. That is a problematic stain on his record, and I think he has definitely sided with the mayor far too often. And again, you said that Mira was a progressive when she ran. Again, you know, campaigning in poetry and governing in prose. And just because the words rhyme, we should not be falling for this every time, okay? And I do think that Janice Lewis-George is obviously the more progressive of the two. But it's going to be surprising to see how that shapes up. And it's a curveball for you. Are you ready? Are you sitting down, Ari? what is the likelihood of a serious white mayoral candidate?
Well, I think if Schwab runs, he may be our next mayor, Brian Schwab, the attorney general.
Now, that would really shake things up. Brian Schwab, who was supposed to be, I guess, here on the DC Takeover edition of What's at Stake, we're still waiting from your office to confirm that, because we did get a verbal confirmation that he will appear on this program on the Anacostia Coordinating Council 32nd Annual Boat Ride. Mr. Brian Schwab, AG, thank you. No shade. But that's the first time I've heard his name mentioned in that short list. Do you know something we don't? Is there some inside information here you'd like to share with our listeners?
I don't have any inside information. I think he's doing a good job as an attorney general.
I do think he's doing a spectacular job.
And he's actually a candidate that if he ran, he's done such a good job as attorney general, he might actually get some pushback from running, because people might be scared of him being mayor.
If Attorney Brian Schwab, Attorney General, is listening, please consider running, because if nothing else, you will push a progressive agenda and force the other candidates to capitulate to that agenda and absorb and adopt some aspects of that. So I would urge him to do so, because, you know, maintaining the status quo at this point should not be an option.
And if I could add something to that, you know, I don't know what it is about D.C., but it's almost like we track our mayor through the D.C. council. And like the D.C. council, they got like a staff of what, like 7, 10, 12 people to like mayor, where you're like running a government with like thousands of people. I think it's a big leap from like council to mayor, and I'm not sure how we got there where that's how we track our mayoral candidates. But like AG is definitely a better fit for that. Like Brian Schwab has an office of like 700 people that he's managing. And so I don't know. I think it's just a much more natural fit for, you know, maybe we should start looking to the AG to be our mayor, or someone else outside of council. You know, I think council gets in merely because they're recognizable and they become like the hot candidates. But, you know, really, when you think about their work experience, I don't know if it's best suited than, you know, even like a business person or, you know, anybody with management leading experience managing a lot of people.
Well, in preparation for this interview, I looked up potential mayoral candidates. And some names that was shocking to me is that Elisa Silverman was on that short list. She has publicly declined. Y'all laughing. I like Elisa. We need some more independence. She, you know, we're going to close out on my Zionist rant on Mira Bowser's criticism of Mira Bowser. But having said that, Elisa could be a little bit more progressive on that front. But I like some of her policies, the progressive ones. Randy Clark, CEO of Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. I have never heard of him. The CEO of WMATA is on that list. And of course, Kim McDuffie. Shout out to Rhonda Hamilton, small business owner. She's an independent candidate. Just want to throw out some of the names that's actually out there. Ari, that's about our time. Anything you want to wrap up and take us home with? And any advice going forward for the mayoral race?
Well, I would just say if you're running for mayor, try and focus on, you know, the people, because I think that, you know, I don't think it's going to be enough to just have corporate backing in this campaign. I think people are looking for something different at this point in time. So, you know, just make the people your focus.
And your website for Stoop Law, attorney?
www.stooplaw.com.
That is Ari Teresa, stooplaw.com, specializing in zoning, land use, and urban development. He is a civil rights attorney, and we are so honored to have him here, and thank you for the work that you're doing. Thank you, Ari.
Thanks for having me, Kamal.
Now, before Mayor Bowser destroyed Black Lives Matter Plaza at the behest of the fascist Trump regime and welcomed the D.C. takeover, she became the first sitting D.C. mayor to visit apartheid Israel when she led a delegation of 40 stakeholders for a five-day mission that included meetings with tech and cybersecurity companies. This occurred shortly after the launch of a nonstop flights between Dulles International Airport and Tel Aviv. The primary goals were to attract foreign direct investment into the district. Joining the delegation were representatives from business, government, and community sectors, according to a press release from the Executive Office of the Mayor and D.C. Chamber of Commerce, which explains why the Wilson Building that houses the mayor's office and D.C. Council was lit up in honor of apartheid Israel after October 7th, but couldn't even pass a resolution for a ceasefire for two entire years during the height of the genocide. The Jewish Community Relations Council of Greater Washington actively campaigned against the council passing such a resolution, claiming it would disrupt government functions. This is, too, part of the legacy of D.C. Mayor, three-time term, Mayor Bowser. We'll be right back after more of these messages after this break. This is the D.C. Takeover Edition of What's at Stake. And I'm your guest host, Kimon Freeman. We see you on the other side of this. Thank you for listening.
This is your social justice calendar for the week of December 8th, 2025. Wednesday, December 10th is Pan-African Community Action's next Asada Shakur Study Group session, a screening and discussion of Salud, a film exploring the Cuban healthcare system and its global impact from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Black Workers and Wellness Center on 2500 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Southeast D.C. More info and registration is on pacashowingsalud.eventbrite.com. That's P-A-C-A showing S-A-L-U-D dot eventbrite.com. On December 11th from 5 to 7 p.m., D.C. Trainers Network will hold an end-of-year celebration at the Festival Center on 1640 Columbia Road Northwest to enjoy food and a wonderful celebration of all the activists that have been trained to facilitate better meetings, anti-racist practices, and more. For more info, visit dctrainersnetwork.com. Thursday, December 11th, the Institute for Policy Studies, IPS, invites you to the COP30 Virtual Report Back, The World's People versus the Global Polluters, What Happened at the UN Climate Summit in Brazil, with a panel of movement organizers who were on the ground in Belém to speak about the road ahead for the fight for climate justice, 4 to 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. More info and registration is on ips-dc.org/events. WVFW's Social Justice Calendar connects you to grassroots activism in the DMV. Submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of the event. This is due by Thursday at 5 p.m., at least 1 week in advance of your event. WPFW's Social Justice Calendar helps build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Welcome back to the DC Takeover Edition of What's at Stake.
After over 36 weeks of boycotting in Columbia Heights, originally initiated by Reverend Graylin Hagler, activists gathered in support of the Target boycott during Black Friday weekend, kicking off the height of the shopping season. With a great turnout, but with people still willingly crossing the picket line, it's important to point out that some people would have still rode the bus during the Montgomery bus boycott. The words of MLK come to mind. In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our
friends. Tamika D. Mallory, activist, New York City.
Peace, family.
Peace.
It is so incredible to be here in Washington, D.C. this weekend, sharing space with all of you. Many of you have been here holding down the picket line outside of this Target for 30 plus weeks, 36 weeks, I understand. Dr. Dante is here. That is incredible commitment and discipline. I know we see the videos and even our own family members tell us that they're going to Target anyway, and we get frustrated. But remember, there is a community of us who have stopped spending with Target other major corporations, and our work is to be commended. Do not be dismayed just because you find somebody who has not caught up with the movement yet. Our responsibility is to stand for them anyway. Our responsibility is to fight for our communities even when they don't stand and fight for themselves. And so this commitment is not just appreciated, it is honorable. And history will record that all of us who are here and those who have been here for 36 weeks are doing the work for our survival. This is not something to play around with. Yes, we sing songs, we have joy, but this is serious business, brothers and sisters. And you are a part of history. So give yourselves a round of applause and some real loud noise so they will hear you all across Washington, D.C. Let me say that when Donald Trump and his soulless administration started to attack diversity, equity, and inclusion, you got to say DEI.
That's right.
And make sure that you state the words.
Right.
Because who in the hell is mad at diversity,
right,
equity, and inclusion? There were lots of people who called me, my friends, and very powerful people. And they said, it really doesn't matter. Like, we don't benefit as Black people from DEI as much as other communities. They had the data. But I knew that when they said anti-DEI, they meant anti-Black women especially. And now we know that it is above 300,000. In fact, the latest numbers were released recently, and it looks like there's almost 800,000 Black women who have been pushed out of the workforce since January of this year. Okay? Which means that there's probably more.
That's right.
The number may be double.
That's right.
Yes, yes.
You see, this administration understands that Black women are the foundation of this nation. That we hold this nation together. And they are punishing us because of the way that we vote as a community.
All right.
They understand that attacking us means that they are attacking the Black family, and by attacking the Black family again, they are assaulting all of us together.
All of us.
And we cannot leave Black men out of the equation. The numbers actually state that at least 7.6% of Black men have also lost their jobs since January. So when people try to tell you about the data may say that white women benefited more, but the actions show that our communities will hurt worse.
That's right.
You see, James Baldwin said, I can't believe what you say because I watch what you do. And Target signed on to be a part of the demise of our community and the assault on black women. We cannot accept that. They must be punished and held accountable for their actions. My comrade in the Target Fast 3, Pastor Jamal Bryant, will come and preach next. And our sister, Senator Nina Turner, is not able to be here. But in all our conversations with Target, we have heard over and over again, well, we're still doing the work. We're still doing the work. We just changed the name, but we're still doing the work. Well, we cannot be silent about racism and fascism and sexism. We have to be loud about it. So either you stand with our communities or you don't. And I have asked over and over again to Target, what is the difference between you and Costco?
That's right.
What is the difference between you and Ulta? What is the difference between you and Delta? What is the difference between you and other companies who said they would not get rid of their DEI programs and they would call it DEI by name?
That's it.
What is the difference? And they were not able to answer. And in fact, because we asked them tough questions, we ain't heard back, have we? Not another word. So we're okay with standing outside. We're okay with being in the cold, in the heat, whatever it is going to take to send a message through Target to the rest of these corporations that when you disrespect our communities, we will stand up, we will be disciplined, and we will fight back. When Dr. King was asked after the Montgomery bus boycott ended, to give some words about how this happened, he said, we realize that our feet was more important than their bus routes.
All right.
You understand that? And he said, our feet, we can walk better than we can be disrespected. And I say to you today, brothers and sisters, that the disrespect against us, it is not worth towels. It is not worth TVs. It is not worth discounts. It is not worth the disrespect that they are inflicting on our communities. Find somewhere else to go. And if you can't, use the damn towel that you already have in your house. Turn your furniture around and make it look a little bit better. Fluff up your pillows and use what mama taught you. You already have enough. We ain't buying it. We don't need another thing from these corporations. They can go to hell.
Reverend Jamal Bryant, Pastor, Atlanta, Georgia.
Let's make some noise for the movement. Come on, open up your mouth. Next Friday marks the 70th anniversary of the Montgomery bus boycott. And I wanted you to know that you are history makers because this is the most significant movement in the civil rights movement in 70 years to make such a transformative difference. And because you are a history maker and a world changer, would you please make some noise right there? Make some noise. I wanted to take one moment in tribute to those who have marched before us, those who have stood before us, those who have protested before us. We have sung today, we have rapped today, we have given poetry today, but I want to give tribute to the ancestors who went before us. Mama. Would you lift up that right fist? Lift up that right fist for me. Just one line of, we shall overcome. We shall. But this time sing today. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome
today.
Oh, deep in my heart, to lift up as high as you can lift it. This is a painful day.
Yeah.
That 70 years later, that this demonstration is even necessary.
My, my, my.
Can you imagine 70 years ago in a small city, Montgomery, Alabama, they had no idea that they were going to transform the nation. And here we are in Washington, D.C., the world's most powerful city.
My God.
And we are crying out for what the Constitution promised.
That's right.
Of liberty and justice for all. To know the nameless and faceless people who for over a year walked to work, walked to the store, walked to church. Did not know that 70 years later that we would be on a street in Washington, D.C., crying for the same rights. History, if you don't learn from it, will repeat itself. A whole bus system crumbled, and now a whole economic system is about to crumble. Target didn't realize how strong and how powerful we are. To know that because you have been standing outside for over 30 weeks, the value of Target has dropped by $12 billion. Because you have stood outside the rain, the cold, the snow, the sleet, and under sunshine, the stock when we started was $145 a share. As of on Tuesday, it is at $83 a share. They have not given us credit or ownership of our impact, but the CEO's salary has been cut by 40%. As you are outside, foot traffic in Target across the country has dropped by 10.9%, and online shopping has gone down by 9%. It is not because of tariffs, it is not because of trade, it is because of conscientious objectors all over this country who believe that America can be better than what it is right now. This is a picture of what America can be when we unify ourselves and really live up to what the standard of what our ancestors marched for and died for and cried for and protested for and fought for. And I wanted to pause to really celebrate Ground Zero.
Yeah.
Because history will have to record that the new civil rights movement was not birthed out of Selma, not out of Montgomery, not out of Nashville, not out of Greensboro, not out of Atlanta, but out of Washington, D.C. And I wanted to really salute you because you are this nation's authentic patriots. To be able to believe in a nation even when you don't have representation. To really believe in the best of a nation when you pay taxes but still don't see the results of it. I want to just salute you because you are what America is supposed to look like, of liberty and justice for all. What will happen when we're actually the land of the free and actually the home of the brave? We can't be out here for an hour and not pause to celebrate that if this is a great call for democracy, that it would in fact be an onus of responsibility to call for that same democracy for our brothers and sisters in Palestine.
That's right.
That we call for our brothers and sisters who have lost protection from Haiti.
Yeah.
That we have to say something about those who are yearning to breathe free in Jamaica.
Yeah.
We cannot forget those who are in the Sudan and in Somalia. We cannot forget those who are in the Congo. We cannot forget those who are on the south side of Chicago. And we cannot forget those that are in Memphis. And so today, you are here while others are in the mall and others are online shopping and others are watching Netflix. History is going to ask, where were you on that Thanksgiving weekend when America rolled over and played dead? When the most out of shape president in modern history was sitting on the throne, you can say that you were standing up and making a difference. Would you do me a favor? Their pictures may never be on a stamp, but their history will be stamped for generations to come. Would you celebrate those who are standing around you? Come on, celebrate them. I'm an 80s baby, so when I grew up, Nancy Reagan was the first lady. And she had a campaign saying, just say no to drugs. But here's what's crazy, is that under that campaign, drug usage went up by 65%. Because you can never tell people what not to do without telling them what to do. And so I need you to hear the intention of the heart of what it is that we're saying, that while we are not buying it from Target, who are we buying it from?
Of
the fastest growing entrepreneurial spirit in America is black women. And I want to salute. Come on, let's cheer for our sisters. I flew from Atlanta to be with you on today. We're doing a black market in Atlanta with 100 black-owned businesses under one roof. Over 1,000 people came on yesterday. They're there today and will be there again tomorrow.
Wonderful.
But I left Atlanta because you are so important to the movement. You are so valuable to where it is that we are in history that I want to be a part of it. All the more because I'm a girl dad. And I understand the value of black women and where they are in the marketplace. And so would you do me a favor? If you are a sister, black, white, Asian, or otherwise, if you are a sister in this space, can we cheer for all of our sisters who are out here today? Come on, you got to do better than that. And so with intentionality, I want you this weekend to make sure you support neighborhoods, small and black businesses so that they can flourish and they can shine. This is the largest unemployment that we have had for black people in 15 years. It is the highest unemployment we've had for black women in more than two decades. This is the least diverse administration that the White House has had since 1956. We are doing the electric slide backwards. And so we've got to make sure that we are going forward ever and backwards never. And so while Target is our focus primarily today, we also want to champion and underscore that you not go to Home Depot. Because Home Depot is responsible for calling ICE agents on workers who are picking up supplies to build American houses. Also say no to Amazon, which is one of the lead contributors to this administration, to the inauguration, and to fascism at work in a corporate setting. This is the hour where America is getting ready to see that Jesus was right, even to the least of these.
Yeah.
How you treat them is how you treat me.
That's right.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're getting ready to see where is authentic Christianity.
Yeah.
There is no such thing as an illegal alien. Because if that is the case, then you can't celebrate Christmas. Because Jesus didn't have paperwork. Y'all not saying anything. You got to have some real understanding of what compassion is and what is my neighbor. Is that we've got to love our neighbors as we love ourselves. And people who don't love us don't love themselves. I am excited because you are making America great for the first time. Because America has never been at its best until all of us have equal footing, of us have an opportunity, and all of us have a chance. Would you lift up that fist? I want to close in prayer for all of us, and all the more. Yes. Yes. And all the more, I want to pray for this nation. When it is that we leave here on today, show me where that address is. Yes. Yes, we're going to Shiloh Baptist Church, 1810 9th Street Northwest, where they are doing a bazaar of black businesses today and tomorrow. We want to support them. Lift that hand as high as you see our future generations going. Lift your hands as high as you want to see your family go. Lift your hands as high as you believe our future is going to be able to achieve. God, we call on you today. Because you said, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, you will hear from heaven and heal the land. God, you got to heal the land because America is sick. It's sick because it has dementia. It forgot who built the nation. It's sick because it has a bipolar disorder. Because it has one personality during the day and another personality at night. It is sick because it is suffering from schizophrenia. Because they say that they are against migrants, but it is only migrants from third world nations, but not migrants that come from Europe. It is sick because it has a vertigo. It can't stand up straight on the principles of democracy and liberty on which it was built. It is sick because it has, in fact, an acute case of COVID because it is transferable to those who are weak and don't have a spine and don't have a backbone and have low immunity. We pray, dear Lord, that you would heal this nation from politicians who will not speak truth to power. Say something for those who are broken and left behind. And God, we pray that you will cover the children. Cover the children of D.C., cover the children of California, cover the children from Colorado, and cover the children who survived Epstein's Island. In Jesus' name, amen. God bless you. Let's continue to stand and let's continue to fight.
We won't go. Shop at any Target store. Say no, no, we won't go. Shop at any Target store. Exactly. Exactly, y'all. So this next song, y'all. But in honor of this mission that we doing today, I want to change up the lyrics. Because the hook usually goes, if ain't nobody got me, I got me. Because that's where my faith at. But I want to switch it up and say, if Target don't got me, I got me. Because that's where my faith at. If Target don't got me, I got me. I swear that's straight facts. If Target don't got me, I got me. I ain't scared to take steps. If Target don't got me, I got me. So I'm never looking back. Y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Do y'all hear me though?
Yes,
you can feel me, but I need you to hear me and feel me at the same time. Okay. I just need y'all to say I got me with me. So if Target don't got me, 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 they ready, all right? Check. Ha, ha, yeah. Yeah, alright, 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 if Target don't got me, cause that's where my faith is. If Target don't got me, I swear to straight facts. If Target don't got me, I ain't scared to take steps. If Target don't got me, so I'm never looking back. Fumbling the bag that can never be me. Instead I'm carrying my bags to send on Christmas Eve. It's me, myself, and I that I got. So running from a problem, no I will not. It's written in the stars or rampant in the sky. They told me love is blind, so I opened my third eye. I had to fall back from Target in my circle, cause I'm trying to pick at the places they ain't going to. Disrespect to none of my friends, still loving you. But we got different rhymes, I ain't comfortable chasing that aspirations, living basic ain't an option. So I'm gonna be something before I'm nothing. Just being honest, I'm tired of all the bluffing. I can't sit down if I'm standing up for something. When no one's around you, who you go for help? I had to realize I could only rely on self. If Target don't got me, cause that's where my faith at. If Target don't got me, I swear that's straight facts. If Target don't got me, I ain't scared to take steps. If Target don't got me, so I'm never looking back. Knowing who I am, know who I'm supposed to be. I got lots of plans, sticking to them faithfully. Carrying some trauma, heavy as some groceries. Shout out to my mama, the strongest woman I ever see. Leaving good karma, and with the negativity. Tired of the drama, and leaves me some serenity. Just like Obama, find a woman with some decency. Keep God close without wearing a decency. Faith get tested, though I'm not shook easily. Life is chess, ain't no checkmate checking me. Microwave music in the stew, making recipes. My music gon' be timeless, y'all just have to wait. Target don't got me, cause that's where my faith at. If Target don't got me, I swear that's straight facts. If Target don't got me, I ain't scared to take steps. If Target don't got me, so I'm never looking back. If Target don't got me, that's where my faith at. If Target don't got me, I swear that's straight facts. If Target don't got me, so I'm never missing steps. If Target don't got me, so I'm never looking back. That's what I'm talking about, y'all. That's what I'm talking about.
Thank you for listening, and thank you to our engineer, Michael Nasella, and our executive producer, Verna Avery Brown. This has been Kimon Freeman, your guest host for the DC Takeover Edition of What's at Stake. Please stay tuned for Wake Up and Stay Woke with Dr. E. Faye Williams. Stay safe, stay strong, stay woke. Do something.
This is Medea Benjamin of Code Pink with the WPFW editorial. As Washington escalates towards confrontation with Venezuela, opinion polls show that in the United States and Venezuela, the majority oppose U.S. intervention. Yet instead of listening to the people, the Trump administration is charging ahead with escalation, labeling Venezuelan officials as terrorists, asserting the right to strike vessels in the Caribbean without evidence or congressional approval, tightening sanctions. This week, President Trump said something important, that he is willing to talk to President Nicolas Maduro. We hope so, but let's not be naive. The U.S. has used talks before as a cover for military action, including against Iran, engaging diplomatically one day while preparing strikes the next. So we have to ask, is this a sincere step towards peace or the prelude to something far more dangerous? The fundamental truth is that Venezuela is not our enemy, and war is not the answer. 28 million Venezuelans have already endured years of economic warfare through sanctions that block medicine, fuel, and basic goods. A U.S. military strike would only ignite an internal conflict and shatter countless lives. We've seen this story before, Iraq, Libya, Syria. So today, Code Pink calls on the White House to honor the will of the people and calls on Congress to rein in unauthorized military force and lift sanctions so Venezuelans can rebuild their own country in peace. For WPFW, I'm Medea Benjamin with Code Pink. You can learn more at codepink.org/Latin America.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW Studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW Washington.
Inviting all D.C. hand dancers, Philly boppers, Chicago steppers, Carolina shaggers, and West Coast swingers. The Treehouse Dreamers venue offers dance music from Motown and more every Friday, 1 to 5 p.m. at 4722 14th Street Northwest. DJ Jam and Dave and other fine DJs provide an atmosphere offering seniors socialization while getting much-needed quality movement through familiar tunes and dance every Friday. Details at 301-922-4064. That's 301-922-4064. WPFW offering wellness through dance, one activity at a time.
Welcome to the Collision.
The Collision, where sports and politics smash. Thursdays at 10 a.m. and on iTunes and Google Play. WPFW, Washington, D.C.
Good morning and welcome to Wake Up and Stay Woke. Have we got a lot to wake up and stay woke? Have we got a lot to talk about this morning? And I've got the right